Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Inside the Studio on iHeartRadio. My name's Jordan Runtog, but enough about me. My guests today are a pair of brothers, but unlike the Gallaghers, the Davies, or the Everlys, they get along great, which is something of a rarity in rock and roll. You probably became aware of them during their tenure in the band R5, before they struck out on their own as a duo with their 2019 debut, X. Now they're back with their sophomore effort, Girlfriend. It's an eclectic blend that melds a diverse array of influences, ranging from classic rock staples like INXS and Bruce Springsteen to 90s hip-hop producers like Timbaland, will.i.am, and the Neptunes. The record's out October 15th, but fans got an early taste with a string of recent singles, including Heaven Angel, Number One Fan, and Leave Me Feeling Confident. I'm so happy to welcome Ross and Rocky Lynch of the Driver era. I hope you enjoy our talk. Take a listen. You got a new album on the way, Girlfriend, the first since your debut in 2019. You've said that this is your most eclectic work to date. I think there was a quote about you saying that this was more Rihanna-like than your last album, X. I wanted to start there. What kind of influences went into the pot for this?
I mean, I guess it's kind of everything. Everything that we've ever grown up on or anything that we've been influenced by recently. It's such an interesting question to answer because like we live with music, like music's always everywhere with us. Like on the best days, like music's playing all day, you know what I mean? And that could be a range from like Bob Marley to like freaking, we've been, talking about Lil Wayne recently because of his, he honestly just has an amazing career and some amazing tracks as well, obviously. And then like Cardi B, like Pharrell.
I feel like there's always a growing up. We like there's a lot of like I don't know, kind of like '90s like hip hop, somewhat I guess that influenced a lot of our production tendencies. And so, I mean, Ross just said Pharrell. You know, even like you know Dre. Some stuff that Jay-Z's done, like we've been listening to a lot of that recently. And then it kind of like, it goes all the way to like, for whatever reason, I was kind of obsessed with, and we both like this a lot, but like Phantom of the Opera. I listen to a lot of Phantom of the Opera.
No way.
So like, it was a wide spectrum. And I think that's kind of why a lot of what we, a lot of what we do now usually does. A lot of our productions tend to have a little like hip hop R&B flair to them. And then, you know, we always like to kind of just like, I don't know, gloss it up with some nice pop elements.
I feel like even more and more as we go, actually, we're sort of like leaning more towards hip hop, like the more music we make. So I feel like that has still yet to be, fully accented in our music, I guess. But there's undertones throughout, for sure.
I was going to say, I mean, I think you're two singles back, Heaven Angel, that started off as like a hip-hop freestyle, right?
Kind of.
You were kind of saying that. It's a lot of the melodies and parts that end up going into songs usually are somewhat of like a flow or like a freestyle. So Heaven Angel, for instance, was I was in here kind of working on the song, and Ross was just like over yonder by the fire, just playing acoustic guitar, and essentially it's like the same. It somewhat is the same thing of like, oh, let me freestyle, but you just are kind of doing it with like an acoustic guitar and or you know the genre.
It's like
the
freestyle
genre,
rapping, but singing.
Yeah, the genre is floating more in. Specifically that song, like a little more like funky, a little funk pop rock thing, a little more.
Now you're talking to me from your home studio. You've been insanely productive. I think in 2020, you released, I think, 5 songs. How much of this album was done during lockdown in the room that you're talking to me in right now? Was this a I hate to say quarantine project, but was a lot of this done during lockdown?
Sort of towards the end of lockdown. In the beginning of lockdown, it was a bit of an uninspired time. Yeah. You know, with the world being shut down and just like there's nowhere to go, nowhere to see. It was much more of a self-reflective time to read and meditate and to kind of get spiritual, I guess. So we took a lot of our time to do that. And then about halfway through, we started picking up production again. And yeah, you're right. This is where pretty much it all happens. And well, pretty much all of the Driver era has happened in this room, actually.
Yeah, wow. There's on this album, we basically like wrapped and finished everything in here. But where the some songs were started and whatnot, it's, you know, it's this room. It's in Vancouver. He had a little spot. We had like a little a baby grand, you know, with like a little portable studio set up where some songs were started and somewhat, you know, not necessarily finished, but like got to a good place. And even back in our old
mom's band house.
Yeah. There's a track that we started like in the living room in our parents' house. And there's another song that was worked on in our original studio in our older band house, which was just like a little guest house to a house in the valley. And so there's a little bit of, you know, songs from different places, but they all ended up coming together here in this room. Mm-hmm. So
I think your latest single, Leave Me Feeling Confident, I think is the oldest track on this album, right? Can you tell me a little bit about where the genesis of that track?
Yeah, so that one happened when we were between houses. We had just finished up a tour or something. And generally,
no, we were on tour on that one.
Oh, we were on tour.
Maybe
oh,
okay. Comment. Yeah,
right. We were on tour.
That we had a little we made like a little portable studio rig, like I don't know how many years back. That's just kind of like always worked. Like if you just have a mic, we have a, you know, a little interface that we can record with. And that was just a some night on tour that we just brought it into a hotel room. I think I want to say we had bus call that night at like midnight. And so we were like, oh, let's just go in this room for a little.
Oh, did they have to fix the MOA? Is that why we had that?
What?
We have this keyboard, this like big keyboard, and it sometimes malfunctions and one of our techs has to take it in and fix it. I think that's why we were in the hotel room.
Oh, because then he was working on something.
Because he was fixing the keyboard. Oh. And then we took that opportunity to like set up like the rest of the bits. Yeah,
we're like, we'll hang out here.
Yeah. And then just found this like weird little chord, that descending chord thing, and just thought it was all sorts of funky. Mm-hmm. And we were just having a heyday with it. We just loved it.
Are you the type of artist that have like a million songs in the vault, like the people that just sort of like can't stop writing, and then when it comes to album time, you got to do this kind of massive culling process?
Yeah.
I was just getting the vibe talking to you. It feels like you're writing nonstop. I imagine that you got a whole lot in reserve.
Yeah. Just yesterday, you know, it was Sunday. We watched a little football. And then somehow we found ourselves kind of just, you know, back at the house. And we're like, all right, let's go in the studio. And we opened up like three different songs that we had been messing up recently. And they're, you know, it's three brand new songs that we're adding to this pile of like, I don't know how many kind of like idea wise just exist on our hard drive, but
it's one of those things where we're like, we can't help ourselves, but to want to find the next exciting hook, or like the next exciting beat, or like, so sometimes we'll end up having like five or six of these songs that we're just sort of like crafting. We're letting them brew in the hard drive, if you will. But then like you have five or six songs over here, and then all of a sudden like Rocky starts playing a riff that's like super cool we've never heard before, or like a drum beat comes up and we got to jump on it. We can't help ourselves. It's so weird. But so that's why we have like thousands of songs on our hard drive that hopefully we'll see the light of day eventually.
Are you tinkers? Is it hard for you to let a song go, like when you stop working on it and say, okay, you know what? It's done.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there's like...
How do you know when it's done?
It kind of... whether it's like... It's either management is like, okay, it's time to go. So we're like, all right.
Good answer. Yeah,
it's fine. You can have it. Or it's like, this one's done. This needs to see the light of day. Rocky, stop EQing that snare drum. Let's get this shit out here.
Yeah. Like, I want to say, actually, like right now, songs that aren't released, there's probably like maybe like 10 to 15 that are kind of in like a 90% place, probably. Yeah. And it's like we have like some bounces of them, you know, like sitting on our phones, you know, and they're basically finished, but we probably won't actually be like, all right, cool. It is, until somehow there's like a somewhat of a deadline, or we're like putting together an album or something. So, and then we'll be like, all right, cool. Like, we have to, that one last thing we were like sitting on, it might even take us like 5 minutes. But like, in the back of my mind, I kind of know, like, whatever, like something's like, it's like kind of done, but there's like these couple things, but like, we'll do those couple things when the time comes. And that somewhat is like, it's like, I don't know, if we're a little bit like, a little more, I guess, like, better set up our efficiency of like working.
Yeah.
Like, there might be like, you know, we probably get more.
I also think there's a very vulnerable aspect to releasing music and letting it go. And we're getting better at it for sure. But I think that is also what maybe delays the release of some of these songs is first of all, we like to live with the songs a little bit. Like we were saying that the other day, like, it's nice to have the song just be ours for a little while.
Yeah.
In case like there are big decisions or changes that need to happen. And then also just kind of putting off the inevitable feeling of like vulnerability.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
What is that, just about, you know, these things are your babies, these things that you put so much work into and so much of your heart and emotions into, you're just nervous for, what are you nervous about? Is it just judgment or it not being as good as you want it to be, or?
I think you just overthink it. Because like, even when I listen to songs on the radio or I'm like listening to songs in my car, I'm always like, oh yeah, it can be simple. That's okay too. You know? But in the process of it, you're thinking like, oh, like, people want to hear me be honest, and they want to hear me like shed these layers, or like, it needs to be more than just like, I love this shit, I guess sometimes can hold you up. But it can also be simple, and actually simple is the best.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's just overthinking, but that was one of the best things about the pandemic, is it gave us a second to like reconstruct what was, or just kind of like reevaluate like what's serving us and what's not on a mental standpoint. So I'm actually really grateful for the pandemic. Gave me a lot of time to like reconstruct some of those concepts for myself and for production and stuff. It's good.
What was that Leonardo da Vinci quote? Something like, art's never finished, it's only abandoned.
Yo, I love that guy. That guy was a genius for sure.
Isn't there something, I want to say it's one of, it's either him or one of those guys is like painting something, and he
I want to. Vinci?
Yeah. Is it?
Or there's like,
he like, he like works on it for like 12 years or some shit.
The Mona Lisa.
Yeah. Is it that?
Yeah.
And he's adjusting like barely anything. He carries it around with him for like years.
Yeah.
Something like, is it that?
It's the Mona Lisa.
Is that?
Right?
Yeah. I think that.
Or am I thinking of Michelangelo?
I think it's the Mona Lisa.
I know Michelangelo was working on the Sistine Chapel for some ridiculous length of time. I'm not sure though. I could see them both doing it, to be honest.
Yeah.
So it says Leonardo, this is just some random Google thing. Leonardo begins painting the Mona Lisa, which he will work on for 4 years, according to Leonardo da Vinci's biography.
Wow.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm
pretty sure he thought it was bad too.
I mean, are you that way? Like when you release your album, I mean, if you're listening to your first album X, for example, like do you listen to it? It's like, oh man, that, you know, that hi-hat, we could have done something different with that hi-hat or that snare or that bass sounds too trebly or something. I mean, are you ever satisfied with what you do?
I think on a vibe level, yes. Like whenever a track or like a pocket, a sense for rhythm or like those ways, it's easy to be satisfied. The hardest thing to be satisfied about, I found, is about my voice. Cause I've been doing this for a long time, and it's almost funny now, actually. Like I can go back, like literally I can go back and like listen to a song that I did 10 years ago, which I don't think a lot of people can say. And just hear like 15-year-old me like singing a track, and it's almost hilarious because I'm like, wow, I sound so young. It's like, it's more hilarious than it is anything else.
I think it kind of goes both ways too. Like if we go, you know, dive into X, I guess it's somewhat inevitable to be like, all right, cool. Like you could have, like you said, you know, there's always mixed things. I feel like, which, you know, you're like, oh, like you could have more low end. Like I'm always like guilty of being like, yo, we need more low end. Like I'm always just like trying to crank the low end.
I'm a bass player, so I relate. I feel
like. Okay. Yeah. So like there's definitely that. And then there's, there are times where, say we haven't listened to a song on there for like a second, maybe like a year, and we'll stumble upon it somehow. Maybe someone will play it, or we'll be like, oh, we'll like bump it or something. And there are moments of like, oh, nice job, Rocky Ross from a couple of years ago. Like, sick. Like, that's kind of like you kind of can, like, I don't know, you get to a point you're just like, oh, okay, like, I see what y'all were doing. I don't know. It's good sometimes.
Good. Sometimes like a year out or like maybe more, you can like revisit things and it definitely gives you a feeling of, you know, you can pat yourself on the back. It's a good feeling for sure.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably a nice segue while we're talking about judging ourselves. So talk about number one fan. Let's like get into the, you know, fans, the positive reinforcement. Your recent single, second most recent single. Tell me more about that. Where did that title come from? The message of that song?
It kind of has a lot of messages. I think initially it was always about my girlfriend. Who is an artist as well and really talented artist. I don't know how personal I want to get about. Essentially it's about just being like, hey, like I've definitely made mistakes. Like everyone makes mistakes, but I'm here and I want to do my best. And, I'll be your number one fan. Like I'll be there for you. And I'll be supportive of us, you and us. And then this, the other side to that song is wanting to be your own number one fan, you know, cause oftentimes, especially in art, the artist is you're the person holding yourself back. Like, sure. Like you might get like positive praise, negative praise, whatever, it doesn't even matter. But at the end of the day, it's like up to you to do it or to not do it. And so it's also about like be your own number one fan and like do what you love, kind of. Do you want to add anything onto that?
I for some reason like to mention this, but that's like somewhat of when like that song like we had a track for it and once we kind of started throwing on, you know, top line and whatnot, it was right around this time when Ross fell out of a tree. And I don't know why. I feel like it's relevant to the verse.
He thinks this is funny.
Well, because it kind of sparked like the letdown moment of like the verse.
Like literally fell out of a tree.
Yeah like he literally
and I hit concrete.
He was like going to basketball on a tree.
It
like,
hurt.
Yeah, he was like, I don't know how many, 10, 15 feet up.
I had to have been 15 or 20.
Oh, and man.
The branch breaks underneath him and he just hits cement.
Which is a terrifying feeling.
Yeah, were you all right?
The ground like fell out from under you. Dude, it's not a fun feeling.
So at that point, not only are you like, well, I don't really know how you were feeling, but
I was pissed.
Yeah, you're like you're feeling some extreme pain, and somewhat whether that pain is something that or not, you're like somewhat maybe feeling low. To me, it kind of like sets up the arc of the song of like, I don't know, like coming back around and like being like, I got you somehow. Like in that moment, I feel like I got you. To me, it just paints like the synopsis of the song. Kind of.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay. This guy fell out of a tree. This song makes sense now. I don't know.
Did any of the feelings that went into Number One Fan inspire the title for the album, Girlfriend?
Yeah. I mean, the reason we like the name Girlfriend is because it really tied all the songs together well. But yeah, I think Number One Fan is probably one of the best songs under the title, probably.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned the song, I'm going to make sure I'm saying it right, Crazy Baby, spelled differently, as being a standout track in the album. What is it about that song that really makes it special for you?
The things we've liked to say about that song is... it's kind of the first song, because, you know, we're talking about Heaven Angel, how it's just kind of like, you know, there's somewhat of just like a flow and somewhat of like a freestyle. Crazy Baby is somewhat in that same way, but it's kind of the first song where we both just did that and did our part separately. Because growing up, you know, you're going to sessions and whatnot, and it's like, You're making a song with a couple people that you just met that day, and you're like sitting on a verse. You're like trying to write this verse with these people for like 2 hours or whatever, and everyone's like throwing out all these words on like
what, a lot of James Dean references.
Yeah, just like how like the like your most typical like songwriter words and sentences. And Crazy Baby is exactly not that. It's I got back from, I came back from my girlfriend's apartment actually, and Ross was in here. He just had that song up. I think he just started it.
Just like literally saying it.
And a lot of our workflow is, which we do, you know, we're kind of hands-on with everything when it comes to the music, but a lot of times I'm a little more producer-y and he's a little more top-line-y. But I got back and he was in here doing majority of the production on that song, and he had a couple of his parts that he was already doing, and I was just outside kind of like, yo, I'm vibing this thing, and I was like trying to like sing it to him. He was like, get in there, bro, just like put it down. I was like, all right, dog. Like and again it just kind of, you're like, all right, I guess that's the part now. And
yeah,
and again, it's not like it was like, all right, like how can I like come in with these like, What lines can I say? It was just like, oh, here's, these lines are like happening currently, and you know, I wasn't even trying to think of words, you know. It was like they're just kind of coming out. So in that sense, it somewhat is like a freestyle, but it's also like maybe you found the part you're looking for, like.
The last thing, a little thing I want to add about this song too is it's a good representation of our like orderly chaos when it comes to our music, because sometimes like Rocky's kind of saying, like, we'll just throw things on the canvas and oftentimes just like let it stick and work with it, even if it's like has like minor mistakes or whatever in it. So this song's like a cool version of that, where it's like orderly chaos, where if you listen closely, it, the pocket's real wonky, and there's just like a lot of cool elements hidden throughout that you can just take a listen to it and see if you hear it.
Like so much of your process is letting things happen organically. I know there was an interview you gave recently, I think with Entertainment Weekly, where you're talking about how making music is almost like a meditation for you. It sort of reawakened, it affected your spirituality in a way. I wanted to ask you more about that, about sort of like being present in the moment when you're making music and how that impacts just, you know, you in a spiritual level in a broader sense.
We were saying this a little bit ago, but there's something with like attempting to write music in itself is one of the like craziest like transformation processes. I think, especially if you are trying to uncover or like arrive at like something like arrive at some version of what is true to you, it is very much a spiritual thing.
Yeah, even if you don't start at that place, like if you're an atheist, like trying to make music, I think eventually you're going to have to sort of surrender to the fact that it's a little bit beyond your control, the process of it. And we found the more you do try to control it, and this, what's so weird about this is this process directly reflects like, it's directly reflected in just like everyday life, but trying to control its unveiling just kind of squashes the magic of it. Like you can just get in your own way, which is the idea behind Number One Fan, is like, stop getting in your own way. Just like you can just you can allow it and love it and kind of like allow yourself to be great by being your own Number One Fan. That's like the second idea, but I think that's why music has such a spiritual reaction for the people that make it. It's because, yeah, it's when you witness magic while trying to, or while deciding not to try, just so like being with the music, you end up witnessing magic and you're like, I don't know where that necessarily came from. No. And you'll hear this from the likes of a lot of like amazing musicians, John Lennon and Billy Joel and Chris Martin from Coldplay, like all sorts of musicians will say the same thing. Yeah.
When did you discover that? Did you grow up in a really musical household?
Pretty much. Our parents didn't play music, but our oldest brother was just like obsessed with all the biggest stuff, you know, the Beatles and Elvis and Michael Jackson, and we used to recreate his music videos and dances and stuff and put on shows for our family.
Wait, I need to know everything about that. What videos? That's awesome.
Like, oh man, we did like Justin Timberlake music videos and like NSYNC videos.
All the moves and everything?
Oh yeah, yeah. Move by move. Like we were like,
we did Grease too.
We did Grease. And we were like we copied them exactly.
All the Darren's Dance Groove stuff, or I think that was him, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So much so that our mom at a really young age was like, all right, they obviously like to do this. I can't get them to not do this. They're always just performing in my basement. And so she enrolled us in dance classes and like choir and stuff from a real, real young age. So yeah, like we've spent like days upon days. Like I did like a bunch of ballet. Rocky did a little bit of ballet too, but I don't feel like he was as much into it. but like, yeah. So we have a pretty extensive dance background because of that. I don't know, man. I feel like music just kind of found us when we were really young, thanks to our oldest brother. And then step by step, we've just gotten here.
Ross, I have a ridiculously specific question for you. Speaking of influences, I was reading an interview you gave, I think it was with HMV, and about your favorite albums, and you name checked the Paul McCartney and Wings album Back to the Egg, which is one of my favorite albums that no one ever, like, he makes fun of that album himself, and I've always loved that album. I just wanted to ask you about that because I think that's a great record that nobody ever talks about.
You know what's so funny? I feel bad now because I don't actually know a whole lot about that record. I thought they were asking like what album cover you really like.
Oh yeah, the cover is nuts. Yeah, the cover's great.
Yeah, but you know what? I should probably listen to it a few more times. I'm probably not as like dedicated to it as you are. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's a bizarre record. I mean, it's like, I mean, maybe that's why I like it, because I'm a huge McCartney nerd, and I've just heard all the stuff like Ram and Band on the Run that everybody always listens to, and that's the one that just never gets played, so maybe it just sounds fresher to me, but it's weird. It's from like 79, so he's trying to do like, it's like punk stuff, but then also a little bit of new wave, and then also just him being weird and doing like spoken word stuff, and then there's like a jazz track on there. It's just this bizarre record, and the actual, like, not just the genres he's playing in, but the sounds itself are really weird. I don't know. I'm curious what you guys, as you know, serious music makers, I'm like a fan just like me, would think of it. I think you might enjoy it.
Okay, I gotta go peep that now.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's super weird.
We're gonna bump that after this this little chat.
Yeah, what have you been listening to? I know a lot of people I know during lockdown have been kind of turning to musical comfort food and playing stuff that they haven't played since they were in like high school. I know I've been doing that. What has been on your speakers lately?
A lot of reggae, actually. Yeah? Let me just pull my Spotify real
quick. I kind of did what you just said, where I went and listened just recently. I used to like this album a lot, but OK Go.
Oh yeah, that's a cool record.
Man. I like the album a lot, and I hadn't heard it in like a second. But Hungry Ghost, 2014.
Wow,
that is a cool record. I forgot about that record.
Around that time, like I liked it a lot, and I hadn't listened to it. And just like the other day, I went and listened to the whole thing, and I was like, "Yo, it's sick." They have that, to me, it's kind of early for its time, because everything in there sounds super like they were just like, yo, let's just like make a computer record. Like it just sounds like it's in the box, but like, maybe that's why I like it. But like, it's a fun record.
Yeah. I really like OK Go.
Yeah.
I think they're underrated.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to check that out again. All right. You play Back to the Egg. I'll play Hungry Ghost, and we'll compare notes later.
Sounds good.
Well, my last, you know, couple questions about the tour. You're going to be getting back out on the road soon. That's got to be nice after 18 months, I think, of being home. How do you feel?
It feels good. It's really reassuring to know that all this work that we've done over the past 10 years has it's kind of like a really nice security blanket. Because, you know, over the quarantine and stuff, it's like you spend all this time alone and without like work and getting to see like the people who enjoy the music and stuff. And, you know, it can, you can just kind of forget about it, I guess, a little bit. Yeah. But it's really reassuring to be like, wow, we can freaking go to Europe and like sell out all these like these shows. In South America, and freaking, we're playing two nights at the Fonda in LA.
Oh man!
and we know, and it's just like, it's just really nice to know that people want to come see the show, And even though we've been doing it for so long, and like, I'm sure it's going to be a lot of the same people, like, that was really exciting to re-realize. Because I feel like it just hit me the last few days. Because someone was like, they were like, yeah, Argentina sold out in 10 minutes or something like that.
Oh,
our publicist told us that. I don't know. I'm just like, I guess we're just not in the know all the time with those kind of facts. But I was just like, holy crap. that's really something, man. And I'm really grateful. I'm really, really grateful because we've worked hard to be in this position for sure. No doubt. So that feels really good. Really, really good. And I'm really excited to put together a great show and go see all the fans and knock their socks off. We still have yet to do a lot of that work, that pre-show work, gearing up for the tour, but it's going to be great.
Oh man. Well, can't wait for that incredible homecoming on the stage. Ross, Rocky, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. It's been such a pleasure talking to you.
It's been great talking to you too.
Oh man. Thank you. Well, safe travels on the road. When's the tour kick off again?
I think November 15th.
Okay. Oh, wow. Sooner than I thought. Wow. Okay. Well, safe travels. Enjoy the hell out of it, man. I'm so glad you're getting back out there.
Thanks. Thanks. We're really excited. It's going to be great.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Inside the Studio, a production of iHeartRadio. For more episodes of Inside the Studio or other fantastic shows, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.